Hi, I'm Dorian, the CEO of VestaBoard. And I am panicked about software launches.
Howie, what's up?
Oh, I need a vacation from my vacation. I recently was at Pebble Beach.
Right.
People that follow me know that I was there. But my blog does not do the place justice. It was fantastic.
Picturesque and beautiful place, isn't it?
Yeah, I got lucky too, Knut. But you haven't played.
No.
Has Hans played there? Or Morton?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a mecca. You know, I was telling people, Knut... Because you're not religious, are you?
No.
And I've become pretty non-religious. I have faith. I mean, the Jewish faith. I'm like, I know the stories. I love the stories. Raised our kids Jewish. They had the Bar and Bat Mitzvah. And we've been to Israel. And it feels like, you know, roots. But golf is kind of like, after being at Pebble Beach and seeing Max's reaction to golf, you know. But, man, you go to Pebble Beach, even though it's like the mecca. It's a public course. It just feels like the Vatican of golf. You know, it feels like Rome. But yet everybody's getting along. No fighting. No one's asking for money. It is expensive and it is run well. And Pebble Beach seems like a rich operation, but they're not sending me emails on every Sunday asking me to eat a mint or repent. And it's a place that I want to go back to. You know, I don't want to go back to the Vatican. So I feel like golf is kind of like a good, if you could choose religion, I think cycling and golf are my new religions. Meaning I like the people. I like everything about the industry. I like what it stands for. I like the fitness. I like being outside. I like, and to see Max couldn't sleep the night before. That's how excited he was. But I wake up, I don't know, 5 a.m. to write the day we were playing Pebble, and Max was like, had not slept. He was that excited. And I think as he walked that course, even though he was a good golfer, he struggled just taking it all in and like playing golf. I mean, he's still a great player, but like he struggled. It's not an impossible course, especially we played on a perfect day with perfect golf conditions, sunny, no wind, not cold. But the few holes that were windy, you could just see how tough the course was. The 14th hole is a beast. 6 through 14. Just some of the most incredible golf. Then we played Spyglass to Canoe, which blew my mind. Yeah, blew my mind. So I feel grateful for all that. Speaking of grateful, you know, what we do here is we talk to entrepreneurs and founders and investors looking for inspiration and trends. And the founder we have on today is a true epitome of just a grinder, like hard idea. We had 8 Sleep on. Mateo, I believe his name was.
Yes, we did.
And that was a hard one. Like, what? Your mattress is going to be fitness? You know, I buy into all that. Like, I buy sleep. We spend so much time sleeping. But a really hard idea when he's raised hundreds of millions of dollars now.
Right.
And I feel like our next guest, I'm a little more biased because I'm a small personal investor in this. It was like, oh my God, I have to be involved in this, even though I don't think I'm going to make a return. Edit that out so Dorian doesn't hear that. But but I want to be involved. It's not something for our fund because it was hardware. But he pitched me an idea, I forget what year, 15 or 16, an idea called VestaBoard. And as someone who spends a lot of time in Europe and loves art and loves weird things, and I'll let Dorian explain the origins of VestaBoard and this product. But now that VestaBoard is in our office and in my home, and it took a long time to create this hardware and all the mechanics behind it, and it really is art meets science.
It's
meets,
so cool.
Meets technology, meets what he's panicked about, software, which is the long tail of all this. Rarely that you get to meet a founder who is truly pushing a rock up a mountain. And for what? Like, you don't know what the payoff is when you're doing it because it's just kind of art project meets tech. But I wanted to have Dory on now that the product's out there and loved to talk about the grind, the ups and downs, and the future of something like this now that it's in people's hands, because he deserves to tell this story, much like a lot of these innovations that start out as a weird toy that everybody just thinks it's stupid, but has huge opportunity and implications down the road. So let's bring Dorian on. Dorian Porter.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Where are you today?
Good to be here. I am in San Francisco, in our office in San Francisco.
You're in an office in San Francisco. So, you know, you're a lawyer in your past. You're an entrepreneur. I think a bit of an idiot for doing this idea, but I forget how we met. Do you remember how we met?
We first met face-to-face in an elevator in San Francisco, but we had been introduced because of C100. So I think we talked on the phone once, and then I remember you said you'd invest on the way up in an elevator in San Francisco.
So I had been drinking, you're saying, which I think could be illegal that you pitched me while I was drunk. But again, you're not governed by any laws, the rules of GoFundMe and the rules of Kickstarter. Maybe Michelle, C100. So yeah, I used to get hit up maybe by Michelle. Who was running C100?
I don't remember at the time who was, I mean, Joanne was probably the exec director. I can't remember who was chair. It might have still been Chris at the time. But I was asked to reach out to members who were outside the Bay Area and get them more engaged. And first on my list was a guy named Howard Linson in Phoenix, Arizona.
And did it say sucker next to my name, or what did it say? Was there an asterisk that said wild card?
What have you done for C100 the last 5 years? That'll determine it.
No. I don't want people to know I'm Canadian, let alone Canadians. All right, so you hit me up in the elevator. I remember I just said, wow, you just caught me at the right time.
Your wife was with you too.
Oh,
and
really?
She liked the idea too.
First or second wife?
I don't know.
I just wanted to now, I know I don't listen to the podcast because we'll be hiking. She'll go, that wasn't funny. So were we in San Francisco?
Yeah. We were, I think we were, I don't know where we were. It was a nondescript building, and you were off to hear a pitch or give a pitch. I can't remember, but we met there. You told me to meet you there. I went up in the elevator with you. I sat in a meeting for a half hour, and then I think that was it.
So let's tell people what Vestibor is today, where you're at, and give a little background of the company. Go ahead. Take your time.
Vestibor is my third startup, and ideally my last. It is all about building this device that you described as art meets technology. In 2012, I was in a train station in Paris, and I was enamored by the departure sign that goes, you know, the split flap that goes clickety-clack, telling you what time the trains are leaving and arriving. I took a picture of it, and I crazily thought to myself, I wonder if I could build one of those for my house and send messages to my kids while I was traveling. And at the time, I was an entrepreneur already doing a startup that did a lot of live venue engagement. So if you were at a Taylor Swift concert and took out your mobile phone, you could send messages to the screen using our software. And
oh,
so we
cool.
did a ton of live events for Coca-Cola and Red Bull and Live Nation. And pretty much anyone concert touring at the time was powered by our software at the time. So this idea of sending messages to a screen kind of stuck with me, obviously, or was with me. So I thought about this as a project at the time, but was actually in the throes of selling the last company, Moses. And then I took a break, and then that idea just kept sticking with me, sending messages to my kids. I looked at a whole bunch of options. You know, you could obviously do a digital screen, but there was something about a digital screen that did not seem right. I did not want to put a TV in our living room that I could message that they would turn to The Simpsons or YouTube or something else.
Right.
And so this idea of a dedicated display was in my head. I looked at a lot of technology. The split flap was really cool. The more I looked into it, the more I realized it was going to be a really expensive project to make something like this. So I started to wonder, like all entrepreneurs do, is it a company? And then I just started to show people the horrible video I created on my own as to what this thing would do. And I had a couple of people just say, I'd buy that. And then the more research I did into it, it just kept sticking whenever I talked to people. And then I started the company. And it's as you said, it's been a journey.
It's been a journey. And so to catch people up, $29.95 is today's price.
Yeah.
And what does the product look like? It's like 40 inches?
Yeah, so it's about a 42-inch size display. It's not a digital screen. It literally has over 14,000 parts in it, over 8,000 flaps. And those flaps are put into distinct, what we call bits or character units, right? So there's 132 character units. Every character unit's the same, has 64 flaps. They all have a motor, they all have a sensor, and they all plug into a PCB. And they're interchangeable, so like a ink cartridge. But, you know, we tested these things to millions of cycles. So that was really what we had to build, was that character unit. And that's what took a lot of time, took us a couple of years to go from something that was, it was easy to make a prototype because we had the motor outside and it was big and ugly and you could make things spin and land at the right character. What was hard is trying to figure out how you could make it and manufacture it at a price that was reasonable. So each of these character units, you know, we had to make them for less than $10 each. And that was no small feat. And so a lot of people don't like the price of a Vesta board. But of course, 132 times anything is going to be expensive.
Right.
And to get the price even close to $3,000, you know, was, in my opinion, a feat on its own. When you think it has to be well built, has to work, has to last a long time.
Has to look good.
You know, and these signs that you see in, you know, railway station, let's say in France, like, you know, in Paris, that sign probably cost them $2 million. So when people say to me, like, $3,000 for Vestaboard, I think we did pretty good to get, you know, what you otherwise buy out in the world for hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. And we've somehow managed to produce something high quality, looks good, works every time, you know, to land on the right character in the home.
I have a million questions. This is a founder story, but it's more to me about putting this together. Because to me, it was like, charge more. You know, it's like, you know, when I go to Lulu now, I'm like, it looks like crap made in China. Whereas I go to Alo and other people go, oh, why are you referring me to Alo? I can't afford it. I'm like, that's why I like it. I can appreciate, as long as the product's good, the price isn't the object, because it's just so unique and beautiful. So why $3,000?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, because I feel like entrepreneurs should be data scientists when they're pricing things. But of course, for something like this, and quite frankly, for almost anything an entrepreneur creates, there really is no model to follow.
I agree.
You kind of have to just stick it. And I'll be really honest and say that within 3 years of getting married back in 99, my wife and I bought our first two pieces of nice art. And they were about $2,500 or $3,500, somewhere in that range. And as I kind of started to think about a product and whether there'd be a market for it, I didn't want to build a $10,000 luxury product, which of course is only affordable to a certain percent of people. Mm-hmm. I thought about this idea of building something that was nice and expensive, obviously, relative to a lot of other things you can buy in the technology market, but something that was essentially affordable. It turns out, especially as we go down this financing route, that if we can price something for less than $100 a month, we probably open up this idea to a ton of business entrepreneurs, you know, people opening restaurants or retail shops. So the pricing to me had to be not crazy high, but it obviously had its own built-in limitation just by the sheer volume of what's in the product. So it's still a relatively expensive product, but for what it is, I certainly don't think it is. And that was something that drove me around pricing, was not trying to price it too high, if you will. I also have a larger vision of around what other devices. I looked at a bunch of different ways we could build Vestaboard. It didn't have to be the flip-flap mechanism. And so I think what you'll see from Vestaboard over time is, you know, as we get to market with this, we've only been shipping this now for 5 quarters. But let's fast forward another 5 quarters or 8 quarters. I can see us coming out with other devices that'll sit on our software platform. And so from my perspective, it wasn't about creating a luxury product and being a luxury company. Mm-hmm. It was about creating the product that I wanted at a price that I at least could stomach when I first got married.
Yeah.
And doing it that way.
Well, 5 years ago when I was ordering my first one and waiting, what was the price? Do you remember what the original retail price you thought of?
I estimated it at $3,500, and okay. We were offering it at 50% off. And that became very hairy as we, you know, went through the process to design for manufacturing, figuring out what things cost, you know, all the little details that go into actually understanding your costs, landed costs from your factory to your warehouse. The price we initially gave to our early adopters, which we're very happy for, is much closer to our actual cost than we ever would have thought at the time. But that's where it is.
And it's just one product, $29.95, 40 inches, the 132, you know, motors. It makes a beautiful sound, which is, I think, the killer part. And it's also, like you said, all these little things that you as a founder know. It's like, yes, if we just put another screen on the wall in the house and sent messages, it would just be like being at a basketball game. We would ignore them. But there's just something about my daughter that sends me an I love you or whatever. Or there's a quote that you can put up, or eventually, obviously, I think it could be great in any setting, whether it's a restaurant or brokerage or, you know, home or office, because it's just funny. And then we'll get into that. It's like backing into the software model, which you said you're panicked about in software launches, because you're backing into something that could be massive, but now you have to think in stages, both around. This is a true venture capital, because this is a true... In a world where all these companies, these utes, as I call them, come out with 20 and 30 million pre-money, and then they get a WeWork and Slack, and they're off and running with their money. This was true venture capital at every stage of the way. Like, you know, the concept, you had to go make it. You didn't know what it would really be in the end. You had an idea of what the cost would be. And so it's been like a journey. How long exactly since the first check to hear right now?
Well, I'm the worst type of entrepreneur because I was a lawyer. So the first thing I do is incorporate. You know, I don't get the benefit of three years of working on an idea.
Good point.
And someone finally tells you to incorporate. But I incorporated in August 2015. I think in 2016, I raised a little bit of money, $400,000, and we really worked on kind of what it would look like, and we started to prototype around. So it's been, you know, now... It took us almost 5 full years to actually ship a product.
Wow.
And to your point, it was, you know, true staging. And I'm even at that point now. We've raised $5 million in equity. I've got a convertible note that's kind of in the middle of raising here. I'm at the stage, despite having great revenue last year, we did about $7.9 million revenue last year on the product. Feeling good about this year, you know, is this yet ready for the institutional capital? Because we still have a story to tell around making sure that this product's in market, being loved, which it is. That's what I love about this company more than my last two companies. The amount of love I get from customers and fans is through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you layer on top of a venture story, you know, what's the model? We're going to get into the software. We're going to get into future devices. But hardware, I would say, at least doubles, probably triples the timing of those stages that you mentioned when you think about financing a company.
Yeah, I have so many questions. So me at 56 and Knut and I have the same kind of, Knut invests with us. So Knut and I are like brothers in that sense. We've been doing this for... He's been watching more than commenting, but he can appreciate when I get excited about something and we chat about stuff that we're super excited about. Listen, we run a business and we work for our LPs and our job is to invest in software companies. So that eliminated you right from the beginning. But as you and I have been talking, and as I'm no longer 40, as when I started out writing checks, I only want to work on passion projects and, you know, and seed stage deals. You're no longer a seed stage deal, but it's a passion project. So I want to make sure that, you know, I only work on the projects that I'm super passionate about. So I've been dumping ideas on you. But let's go through this. Like, what are you now do this? You got 8 million ish in billings. You've shipped about how much of that? Is most of that shipped?
Yeah, 80% of it. We've got backlog coming into this year that we're shipping now.
And so how do you think about China? How has China changed things, good and bad, in COVID over this? And how do you think about that for getting to the next stage of growth? Is there any other option for you?
I don't see it in the near future. Hong Kong is, you know, we have a Hong Kong-owned contract manufacturer. Their factory is based in China. We got really lucky with the person that I hired early on, who took a love for prototyping and took a love for supply chain, wanted to be fully in supply chain, moved to China 2 years ago, lives there. You know, he's from here, born in the USA, has not returned during COVID. And wow. I have mixed views on China, because on the one hand, you know, clearly we've got policies and agreements and disagreements with China about human rights that need to be resolved. On the other hand, every single consumer in the United States or Canada is guilty of purchasing things from China.
We all have blood money.
Yeah, you don't.
It's all blood money.
You don't have to talk to anyone except maybe my mother-in-law, who's no longer with us, who probably, you know, made her own. She made her own stuff and did all the right things. The rest of us are all purchasing from China. On top of that, I've got a great person who's now met a great woman in China who he's in love with. And everyone's real people. The CM we deal with are real people, high quality individuals. All of the workers that work on our product all seem to be engaged in a way that you would want people to be engaged on a product. And so at the end of the day, we're also talking about people and jobs and the reality of the supply chain that exists in China, which almost all of these chips and electrical components that we need are all based in China. And if we tried to buy them here, we'd face 3 or 4 times markup on their costs. And so you couldn't make the product you want to make. So I think if I take a midterm view, do I see it possibly changing? Sure, there was a lot of movement before COVID into Vietnam. That kind of stopped due to COVID. Huh. But there's no shortage of challenges during COVID with China, just because, you know, they take their lockdowns very seriously. They'll have one case at a port and they'll shut down that port for 2 weeks or 10 days. So that's been extremely challenging in terms of building the product and getting it here. But you also have to take a pause and say, wow, we did something pretty special to be able to actually start shipping the product in 2020 and carry that shipment through to today on a regular basis. And what you get good at with all this uncertainty is planning for uncertainty. So that in a way has been a blessing to be able to start really understanding the challenges and planning for them.
All right. So knowing all that, you have to think through in the future how to get a rate. May not be able to solve it for this $29.95 product, but this is where the future comes in. So people go to the site. So people should know. They should go to vestaboard.com. They're at all, if we've piqued their interest at all, and just see the product running and all the, that's the best place to see it, right? Or search it on Twitter maybe and see how people react with it.
Instagram's really good. If you search our hashtag Vestaboard, you'll see lots of customers good posting idea. On Instagram. And then, you know, we obviously tell our customer stories on Instagram too.
And which celebrity is the coolest that's bought one so far? I mean, besides me.
Besides you, that's a tough one. I mean, I think a close second to you would be Jennifer Garner, probably.
Hmm. And has she been a good user? Has she been supportive?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I'm going to tell this story because I think these are the stories that keep entrepreneurs going. But, you know, when I actually have another great story for entrepreneurs. It involves Reid Hoffman, and I'm just going to tell it because it's such a special story to me, and I've never told this story. And then I'll tell you the Jennifer Garner story really quick. So the Reid Hoffman story is, I had not shown this publicly to anyone until January 2018, we went to CES, and we had this horrible prototype of a character unit called a bit. It wasn't very good. And then we digitally showed the Vestaboard. So it was like, here's what it's going to be made out of, and here's what it could do, because we're just using a TV screen. We put something over it. And it wasn't very exciting to go to CES like that. And we went to CES, and the night before CES, I was feeling like sometimes entrepreneurs do, like, is this what I should be doing? Is this my life? Like, is this what I, you know, I'm nervous. What if no one likes this thing or anything like that? So cool thing happened is, this is a crazy story. Reid Hoffman had sent out his group-wide Christmas card in December. Mm-hmm. I am on his list, but I'm, you know, I wouldn't say we're friends. I'm on his list and I say hi to him if I saw him.
You're linked in.
And I'm linked in with Reid Hoffman, and he'd say hi if he saw me. And he's a super nice guy. And I somehow responded to his group-wide Christmas card with nice video, Happy New Year. And that's all I said back in December. And on January 3rd or whatever it was in 2018, Reid Hoffman replied to me and said, thanks. how are you doing? That was the night before CES. And when he asked me how I was doing, I was like, well, that's kind of a question I'm going to answer, actually, because like, who says, how are you doing, unless they want an answer?
True.
So I replied,
by the way, my therapist would say, don't answer it. Fine. Thank you, Reed. Hope you have a nice life. Goodbye. That's what my therapist would say. But you are a struggling entrepreneur. So what did you say?
So I said, I'm doing good. I'm about to take this product live. And I sent him a link to the site.
Oh, my God. You whore.
At CES. Uh-huh. At CES, I'm a bit nervous. And what did he do? Because we were going to open it up for pre-order at CES. He was our first order. He just replied, said, I love this thing. This looks amazing. And he replied and said, you know, I just purchased one. And that moment was very neat. And what was even neater is we showed it at CES. A couple of reporters came by. They wrote about it. And we had like 200 sales in the first week. And then it was like, holy cow, like we actually have to build this thing. And we're going to have to go figure out how to exactly manufacture it and do all of that. So that was kind of like the real kick, you know, talking about phasing and entrepreneurship. There was some, I'm not going to call it product market fit at that point. I'm going to call it, you know, validation. And that was really special. And so the second story I'll tell you, which just kind of ties into this motivation, is we actually shut down sales because it was like, okay, wow, if people keep ordering this thing, are we going to be able to make it for 1850? Because that was the offer.
Right.
I got to do some more research. Let's make sure we get this right. And then we brought sales live again, I think a couple months later, maybe with a new price and maybe with a new delivery date.
Right.
And my daughter's favorite actress at the time and my daughter's favorite actor at the time. So it was Jennifer Garner's, her favorite actress. Neil Patrick Harris, her favorite actor at the time. Mm-hmm. And when we reopened sales, those two came in and bought it without any prompt, no emails. Those two names came into our database and purchased it. And I got to go home and say to my daughter that these two were customers for us. And those moments, you really can't replace them. So when you talk about celebrities, those two have been great. Jennifer Garner was great. They both accepted
it. As Neil Hungett?
Yeah, they both accepted a DVT unit because we offered, you know, our first 25 units that we were going to actually manufacture. They waited like everyone else and waited and waited. But then we did send them these DVT units, which we've since replaced. You know, a year later, we gave them the proper manufactured version. DVT, for those who don't know, is design validated. It's right before you go into mass production. Mm-hmm. You just want to make sure it's if you can manufacture it the way you want it. Mm-hmm. And they both hung it and they both use it. You know, it's been incredible. And so when they talk about it, which actually Neil Patrick Harris just wrote a love letter to Vestiboard a month ago, we see real traction from that, of course. And the use cases, you know, back to the use cases, mm-hmm. I mean, both of those two have children. Mm-hmm. I think anyone with children is going to get a kick out of this.
Yeah,
I
my daughter loves it.
The insight I feel like I was willing to take a gamble on was the first time I'd ever, I didn't backpack in Europe in the early 90s. It's not like I proposed to my wife, you know, in front of the Paris train station sign. And I was like, oh, if only I could recreate that moment in my house,
yeah.
I would love to do it. The first time I saw this thing was in Paris in 2012. And I stared at it and I was mesmerized by it. Mm-hmm. And so one of the thoughts I had about why this could be a valuable product is because it's unique. It's different. It actually is mesmerizing. And if it's actually mesmerizing, then the market's going to be bigger than just the people who backpacked through Europe in 1984. Those people are going to buy the product because there is a retro, you know, nostalgia feel to them for it. So if I can't get them, it's probably not going to get anybody. But what I really believed about the product was that it was mesmerizing on its own. And so when you see a 4-year-old in front of that product, or you see even a 10-year-old or 12-year-old, or you see a teenager interact with the product.
Yeah, it's magic. Even though it's so simple, it's magic.
Yes.
Because you don't know what you're going to get until the message is there. And is everything going to turn over and it's yellow and then it flips at the last second and it's magic.
Exactly.
And we all love magic.
Yes. So that's what excites me. And then I think when you talk about the use cases, you talk about things like, you know, someone's birthday for the week. Yes, you can send, you know, we see this on Instagram. People comment like, I can use text messaging for this. But when it's one of your kids' birthdays or it's your wife's birthday.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's not your audience.
And you put a message up there for her for a few days or a day, the full day or a week. It's a very different environment in the home or, you know, in an office to have a message up for a couple of days that is rallying everyone around a concept like something special like a birthday. And so I think there's, when you think about messaging, you know, yeah, are you competing against a text message? Kind of. I can always text my kids when I'm traveling. But if I can send a message and it sits there for a few days, it becomes a lot more meaningful to the culture of the house.
Yeah, and let's not listen. Text messages are powerful. I just text the retro, hope you're having a good day. Like, I have a group family chat that my family are in, and they've been banned. Like, I've been off the screen. No one knows how to group chat properly, especially when you have inter-age generational families, 18 people on a family group text. There's fights all day. So I've removed myself from all that. So people, yes, text is fantastic. 1% of the population knows how to use it properly. And that's including Knut and I. So that brings down the rest of the world's numbers. Text is supposed to be meant for making someone's day or something urgent, right? Your world could be made, you could create a smile, or you can change the course of someone's life, God forbid, with an emergency thing. That's what text is. It's become emojis and torture and mismanaged because people don't know how to use these tools. What you created was art. Now, let's get to the possibilities. Are we allowed to talk about possibilities here, or do you want to share any of these things? Could we hash this out live?
Yeah, as long as we don't, I'm not going to talk about what we would launch in the future specifically, but we can talk generally about the future.
All right, so let's talk about the software because you're worried about software launches. So in a world where you've built a hardware product and everything could go wrong, something could break, someone who paid $3,000 is going to yell at you. I can imagine all these things. Someone hangs it wrong, they drop it before they hang it. You know what I mean? Like, I know it took me an extra 3 weeks just to call someone so I wouldn't wreck it to get to the house, and then I get nervous about software. There's so many things that have to go right for that aha delight moment. So assuming all that goes great, which it has for me finally, and Tom, we bought one for the office. What is the software play? Because the software is amazing. We all play with the app here. So what's your vision there?
Well, yeah. So we ship with the free software app, which, you know, lets you control the Vesta board, add users, favorite.
But I think
history.
That's important. People don't realize that. That's what makes us genius. If you get it hung, you'll use it because the app pulls it all together.
The app makes it super easy. So what we're launching and what I'm panicked about launching is we obviously get a lot of requests for automating, you know, the Vesta board. So you could set up your own recurring message channel. You know, you could have a quote from Howard every day on your wall. Mm-hmm. And we're curating a bunch of these channels, right? Dad's jokes, you know, quotes from Lord of the Rings. We have real-time data. We want to bring in like sports scores, news weather. Sure. So that's what we're in the middle of launching. We're a little bit late, which is why we're panicked about it. And this automation platform, I think it's really compelling just because it's going to open up even more use cases for the Vesta board. It's also going to open up a ton of community content, yeah, which I think will be really fascinating. So we're going to have a lot of our customers producing. In fact, Neil Patrick Harris will have a WonderCade channel. He's launched a new newsletter and he'll have a WonderCade channel where you can subscribe to these tips on drinks or travel from Neil Patrick Harris, and they'll, you know, hit your Vesta board once a day. I think that whole automation arena is just really fascinating with the display. And, you know, as you talk about where does this all go, I don't really know. I think what we're going to do is continue to ship the flagship product Vesta board, you know, this year, next year. We're going to make sure that we grow our customer base, get this software right, both the free software and the automation software, and see where it takes us. But the potential of all of these data sources and this community curated content going to places in homes, places of business, I think is enormous. It's also a lot of work because there's a lot of data and real-time connections happening. And, you know, the Vesta board changes across our customer base do add up to a fair bit. But what I like about it, kind of at a fundamental level, is even when my last company, as I mentioned, was mobile to screen in a way. And you just think about, you know, are we all going to be staring down at our phones 24/7 maybe? Or maybe, you know, they'll be strapped to goggles we have to put on our face. That's not the vision of the world that I have. I mean, I think we're going to have to learn not to stare at our phones all
the
time.
Absolutely. It's up to us right now. They're not going away. It's like cigarettes. So what we're going to have to do is develop our own habits that live with this stuff in a way that makes us, we have to make the decision. We have to individually cope with this.
Yeah. And to me, that's Vesta board represents like a break, right? So, okay. Yeah. Are we going to replace text messaging?
No.
Or where you get all your sports scores? Of course not. But if you can get your weather update in the morning from your Vesta board and not pick up your phone, well, okay, that's a little tiny win. So this Vesta board represents, so here's how I'd think about it. I'd think about we're at a phase where pretty much everyone decided at some point, maybe a few years ago even, that everything's going to be in the phone. And it turns out that's true. Everything is going to be in the phone. Now, how do you extract some of that interaction out of the phone and put it back into the real world? And so the internet, of course, is going to power, you know, billions or trillions of IoT devices and cars and all of that type of data. It all sits in the cloud, but our human eyes right now are glued to the phone. I do see a world, you know, first it's Vestaboard, next it's Vestaboard 2, where some of that data gets extracted out, gets used in delightful ways,
yeah,
and enhances the environment, whether it's your home or office or your family or, you know, your work situation, whatever it is. And so I think for Vestaboard, you know, first and foremost, it's the flagship product. Second, it's building the platform that's going to capture a lot of these automation points and this community content that we're going to be able to build. And then third, for Vestaboard, it's thinking about, are there other devices that can enhance our environment that can sit on top of our software platform just like the flagship product does?
This is really about data. Obviously, data is art in this case, but data is data. It can just be sewage or it can be art. And Vestaboard is just another way to look at this in a sewage or art way. I love the art of it now. And eventually, if it's used, people will use it as sewage because they don't know how to use the app. And they you know, but it can be used for joy or everything. What's exciting to me is, and I said this about finance, the phone was inevitable. That's why I was so focused on investing in, you know, a mobile E-Trade generation. Now we have it. Everybody's figured it out. And, you know, with our investment in an alpaca, who I've had on a few times, now everybody can build a brokerage and offer a mobile app that you can trade and invest. And in that world now that everything's been condensed to one screen, which is, you know, a little iPhone, now we have to unbundle that again and say, okay, that was amazing. It was inevitable. Everybody can trade from their phone. But now the true RTs or the true people who love investing will want to unbundle that again and start from scratch and say, what screen do I really want to look at this data on? You know, and where should I be consuming this data? Should I be heads down in traffic worried about the markets, or should I have a desktop or a wall piece or whatever? You know, it could be a Vestaboard where I can consume the data in better ways and enjoy the art of speculation or investing or trading. And so Vestaboard is part of that vision that I had. It's like eventually people will lean back and have to take their data in from more than just their phone. Because like you said, it's done. The iPhone 1 and Android 1, we're getting everything we need pushed through the pipe that ends up on our piece of glass in our hands. But that's not going to be the end of it. It's the beginning of it.
Yeah. Well, and we all know it too, because we all don't really appreciate ourselves staring at our phone all the time.
I see, you know, I was at the NFL game, and I was watching a grandchild of a friend of mine, and I just saw her contorted, you know, while the game was on, sitting with her legs up, just cradling her phone and happy and content, just staring at her phone. And it just wasn't sad or happy or anything. It was just is. And nothing could shake her attention from that. She didn't know anybody was watching her, and it was just, that's just the way it is for kids. And they'll eventually figure it out because they have to, or they'll miss out on a lot of things. So just to yell at your kid and say, look up, that's Greek to them. What does that even mean? What are they looking up for? So it's up to the next level of entrepreneurs and designers and developers to force them to look up, because they will miss stuff if they don't. But you can't just tell a kid to look up. Products have to be created that make them look up.
That's true. We love the phrase look up at Vestaboard. I probably take, I won't call it more realistic approach. I do think humans are the ones who are going to have to decide their own future.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can come along. I mean, technology clearly has a massive impact on people's behavior and how they operate, as we're talking about right now with the mobile phone. So it's up to entrepreneurs and the technology folks to take that in mind and try to map their technology to situations that people can relate to, including moms and dads who might buy a Vestaboard to put in their house. You know, we're not going to solve all the problems of getting your kid to get off their phone, But if we can be a part of that and we can be a part of the culture you want to create for your own family or for your partner or for, you know, yourself, you know, I think that that plays a valuable role. And I think, as we know, as we've learned from some of the other companies that get in a lot of trouble in how they think about technology, you know, the entrepreneurs play a huge role in how technology should be used by other people to form the future that we all want.
No, in a 10-year plan, I can see Vestibor being this. There's the mothership, which is $3,000, $4,000, $10,000, whatever the patriarch or corporation wants to display as art in whatever rooms they want to display it. And then there's screens 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 that are tied through software in different variations to the mothership, depending on cost, but respected because it's a Vestibor way of communicating that then pulls the network together and it becomes a software model, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the vision. I think it's very, if we, you know, and back to your phasing thing, I don't want to run too quickly, right?
Yeah.
Because you want to make sure that you get that mothership right and that it's the product you think it can be. So that's what we're focused on. But do I see other displays in our future? Absolutely. And, you know, there's little things that we can do as a software company, like privacy protection, that'll distinguish us from other companies and, yeah. And community and the ways the information gets used and shown. You know, that to me represents a huge opportunity. It's been an elusive market, you know, like I like the market of putting devices on walls. That seems on its face to be a massive market because it is. There's what probably.
And NFTs now brings that home to a next generation, right?
Sure.
Digital art.
You could
finally, whatever you're going to call it. There are kids that they may not be using the way we wanted them to get away from screens and putting an ape or a frog or a dog or a noodle on their wall, but it's working. Because it's the next layer. It may not be the thing that's the thing, but it's the thing on the way to being the thing.
Yeah. I think, the idea that walls are going to come alive, you know, remember
there was
one of the Schwarzenegger movies had him walking past, I'm trying to think of what it was, Total Recall maybe, mm-hmm. walking past all the advertisements and they're all adjusting to the vacation that he's supposed to take or something. I kind of remember that scene. But we know that data is going to come to the walls in the form of art, in the form of information. And so to me, it's a huge opportunity. And sometimes I think about Vestibor like, you know, I'm going to compress what an industry took to do in 70 years down to 15. So guess what kind of sign the digital signage industry started with in the 1950s and 60s? It was this sign. So instead of 25 years of using this technology, you know, Vestibor will be able to use it, you know, for the first 10 years of our life. Actually, one of the reasons I love our flagship product is it probably is timeless. Like, we're never going to actually have to retire it as a product line. That's why I like the mothership format that it is. But in terms of future, you know, if you think about the signage industry, it's now a $20 billion industry. It's wow. built basically off of digital. You know, our company could follow a similar trajectory in the types of technology we bring forward to put information and art on the walls. And I'm just going to stay focused on this flagship and the software for the next year and a half and make sure we get that right. And then we'll start looking at other types of displays. And there's some really, you know, micro LED OLED technology still isn't quite ready for prime time in a lot of different types of displays. But there's some really interesting things you can do with micro LED and OLED that I think could form the basis of our roadmap in the future.
Yeah, but if you'd done all this technology before an app world, it would just be useless. It would just be art. Now it has a chance to be communication and a platform, which is exciting.
Yeah, well, it's actually back, give credit to the mobile phone again.
Yeah.
You never know what the mobile phone's going to open up. So, like, yeah, that whole digital art space that really didn't take off in the 2000s or even the 90s.
No, I made some investments in that space, New Hive and whatever. And we were all around the puck, and yours is the one that's working. And I only made a small personal investment because it was the longest, weirdest shot on net. Right? Like, it was just like schmuck insurance just to stay focused on the industry. And, like, sometimes schmuck insurance works.
Well, and part of it is the mobile phone because people, you know, you're you're now got your mobile phone next to you all the time. You want to send a message to the Vesta board. You can do it, right? If I made you go back to a computer and do it, you might probably not get around to it. So the mobile phone opens up just tons of opportunities, similar to my second company, where you're able, we were way too early for that one, but we were able to use the phone as a remote control to do life. This isn't quite related, but I want to say it because it is kind of impressive. Do you think those Tesla charging stations could have existed without the mobile phone? Like, can you imagine?
Yeah, like just driving up and hoping there's no lineup.
And yeah. They're all sitting there for a half hour looking at their phone. But without the phone, there's no way you'd get these VCs on Sand Hill Road parking at Safeway, waiting for their car to charge. So I think the mobile phone, you know, and the cloud, of course, just plays such a different world, like way to build companies now than existed 20 years ago. And that's why you see some ideas, maybe not this one with our flaps, but the idea of digital art on the wall and control it with your phone is now so much easier than anyone could have started with digital art, you know, 15 years ago.
Because in a way, even though it's crude, people can put their Bored Ape on a Vesta board, young people, right? Like it won't look exactly like an OLED version of it, but people will know. And because you have color slot, you know, you can flip colors on yours.
Yeah, we definitely should explore that. I do like those ideas, the true digital art for the future. Like I could definitely see us powering other things.
Yeah, the toy is the future. The other thing that I think could be huge for you, and the question is, do you do consumer or corporate? I can see Starbucks, you know. This is an NFT in itself. It's like, who gets the baton, right? Like, you know, I go to a Suns game, and the scoreboard's amazing. First of all, because I'm blind, so half the time I can watch a game on the scoreboard instead of looking at the court. And don't joke about that. And then there's all the stats that you get to see and who's got the most points. And in a world where that exists, you just don't know what the true use case is going to be. But you do know that these stadiums, like I remember going to Leaf games when I was a kid, and you had the score. And that was it. And it was a huge fucking thing. And I used to just think about, that could fall on the ice. Shouldn't there just be a person holding the score up? So in a world where those existed for 50 years in a stadium, now they're like state-of-the-art pieces of communication and data centers for a game. And so I can think about a corporation or how you meld NFTs with this, like a Starbucks, you know, eventually getting these seated in the right, whether it's Chipotle's or Starbucks or some high-end place like Lulu, and people start noticing that there's offers there. Some of, you know, their best customers can have control of that for a day, you know, yada, yada, yada. In a world that where I think NFTs are going, where it's like physical and digital, I think Vesta Board fits in well there too. So there's so much opportunity. So it's really exciting that you stuck with this. And I do appreciate that. That's why I wanted to have you on the show. And I think you did a great job, by the way, answering the questions here. Is there anything I missed that you want to talk about?
No, nothing comes to mind. I was going to just add on to what you just said, just about the idea of, you know, the one thing I love about what we do is it's truly, you know, when you make something out of the alphabet and numbers and some colors, it really is the customer that drives the use cases. And there's just so many variations of what people want to do with this that, you know, is exciting. So that the idea that, you know, everyone who has a Vesta board kind of contributes to the idea set of what it's going to be used for makes it all very exciting.
So if someone wants to buy one today, they listen to the podcast, they go to the site. Usually takes, what, 2-3 weeks for people to get, they go to the site, they check it out. And what is the general purchasing pattern that you've noticed?
Oh, I think it's a considered purchase. They probably either, you know, mostly it's, so we're about 70% consumer, 30% business.
Okay.
We're just starting an enterprise sales team this year.
Yeah, I think that could be huge.
Talking to a lot of different companies about rolling these out. On the customer, the consumer side, it's about 80% men right now. But what we hear, which is really exciting. So most men are probably either going to buy it without asking their wives.
Yeah, I did.
And put it
Ellen
in their
doesn't
office.
Know yet.
Or they're going to ask their wives, and it's going to be about a 2-3 week consideration of the purchase. I'll tell you what's really exciting, and this is actually what I want to talk about that you didn't ask me, is my brother-in-law bought one, right? And he wants to support his brother-in-law, so he buys one. He didn't tell Margo, or my sister-in-law. They get it into the house. Margo says it has to go downstairs by the ping pong table.
Of course.
They put it
next to the wagon wheel table and the dog's playing poker.
Exactly. They put it there. Within a day, Margo was using it.
Should be in the kitchen.
It goes in the kitchen the next day. And every day, Margo and Peter use it to engage with their kids. And so that's what excites us the most, is that it becomes a family purchase. And I think over time, the next year or two, as more families get it, start using it, it becomes a family purchase. And that's a considered purchase. It's going to take a week or two to really, you know, first you're going to get there, then you're going to not like the price, and then you're going to think about it, and then you're going to love it.
How many can you ship right now? Like, so someone takes 2-3 weeks, they get their head around it, they don't tell their wife, they do everything that the averages have done. When can they expect one?
Okay, this goes back to the supply chain. So we're saying June on the site. We're way better at predicting than we were 2 years ago. We will beat June. And so we're already engaged to, you know, continue producing this year. Right now, we're saying you'd get it in June. I know we'll beat that.
And how does a warranty work on this?
We give a 2-year full warranty. If one of those character units breaks, we'd ship out another one. You'd replace it like an ink cartridge, super easy. And, you know, I'll give you a little stat on over 300,000 of those character units shipped to date, maybe 400,000. Mm-hmm. We've had less than 500 problems, and almost all of them relate to travel and transport. And so we've had a really, really good track record on these character units. You know, we did test them to millions of cycles, and so it's a very reliable product.
Very cool. I could talk about stuff like this all day because we haven't even really touched on the art and your designer. And the key person was your co-founder designer, no?
Yeah, well, Faiza was a mechanical engineer from Amazon and Dell. And then we hired a great industrial design team called Bold. Fred Bold and Anson Chung are partners there. They did the Nest. They did Roku. And I like to say that they took my vision and actually made it look beautiful.
It's spectacular. I remember seeing it in New York a couple of years ago with Rachel Scott. Remember you invited me to Soho or something? And I saw it for the very first time.
We found out we met Rachel. That was great.
Yeah. And so I remember seeing it then and saying, okay. But I appreciate the hard work. I know it's been brutal because I've seen the emails and I've seen the long years of doing this. But it seems like your energy's high.
Oh, it's super high.
And you've been through the ups and downs, so there's a lot of good advice there. Would you back other hardware now? Are you because you did hardware and you've been through this? Are you forced now to back other hardware people, or you're like, no, guys, don't do hardware. I'd never do hardware. Only I can do hardware.
I think there's something special about putting something physical into the world that's transformative around that. So for me, I did 2 SaaS startups, and doing the hardware piece is really satisfying. So I'm all in for helping other entrepreneurs figure out what they want to do. I don't want to see this world just become commoditized hardware. I think there's a lot of room for innovation for products. So to me, I'm super energized.
So thank you, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, back to that shout out to Rachel. I'm even going to say, like, in New York, I think I have only run one marathon in my life, but it was the New York Marathon 3 years ago. And guess who was there with her daughter to take care of me as soon as I finished that marathon?
Oh, that's nice. You stay in contact with her.
Rachel Sklar. So that's a huge shout out to her.
So great to see you. Great to hear from you. I mean, good to brainstorm always. Congratulations on getting it this far. Is there more pressure now because it's this far along and it's in people's hands, or less?
I want to build a big company, and having this product in more people's hands has only given more fuel to that fire. And that's what motivates me.
And how many people are at the company today?
We're about 20 people.
And are you hiring?
We just hired logistics and customer success. So we're of course hiring software engineers for our launch of our automation platform.
All right. Vestaboard.com. If you guys want to reach out and talk to Dorian or looking at a really cool opportunity in logistics and software, hit me up. I'll connect you. Thanks, Dorian.
Thank you, Howard.
Talk to you soon. K-Nut.
Yay.
Vestaboard. What do you think?
I love this thing. I love the fist.
What do you like about it? Because you're an artiste, designer, ad man.
Like him. It brought me back to watching the, what do you call it, the train departure, the airports, things like that back in, you know, the 70s and 80s. Really cool.
Yeah, the sound of it is cool.
I know. And they replicated that sound really well.
They did. Yep. There's a million ways this thing shouldn't have worked. So I feel like it's now part of my job, even though I've, you know, for the size that I've committed and for the time that I've given it based on the size of my investment, I feel totally invested. Meaning, like, I hope for Dorian's sake, he becomes a billionaire. For my sake, it's just fun being part of projects that It's not about the money. It's about the final product. And I think that's why Kickstarter is just so popular, which I'm not a Kickstarter guy because I don't want to back hardware projects because I know the odds of success are low. Mm-hmm. But I totally get why now, just being in this, because they've relied on Kickstarter to help get them through some of these cycles, it just reminds me how important those companies have been, which are basically just charity in many ways. And true faith of Americans and people around the world just wiring money to see projects get done. Really fascinating. For all the hate out there and all this, like, we're going the shit in a handbasket, it's a reminder that the innovation and progress and the human spirit of entrepreneurship is alive and well and working. All right, you are listening to Panic with Friends. We sit down with investors, founders, traders, entrepreneurs, and try and give people some insights, get a little bit ahead of the curve. That is Knut Jensen across from me, Sound Warrior. You can search my name, Howard Lindzen, on Apple or on Google, and go to Spotify, search my name, and click subscribe, and you'll get a podcast a week notification. Tell your friends. They're evergreen, so you can go back and listen to some great entrepreneurs, you know, go back in time for a couple hundred episodes, and we're not talking about stocks and inflation. We do occasionally a little bit, but we try and keep it evergreen. So there's some fantastic stuff in the archives, great entrepreneurs and traders and investors that you can follow. Thanks, everybody. We will see you next week.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.